You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking Boston Red Sox with MLB.com's Red Sox beat reporter, Ian Brown. Ian, your team has an amazing ability to make big news even when they are in fifth place. This week it was the signing of Rusny Castillo. How did this all come together, and how quickly did it come together for this deal to get done for a team that's clearly been in search of bats and offensive talent?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, Matthew, is I don't think that many of us knew just how long this was coming together because, you know, the Red Sox painted a picture the other day of a player in Rusny Castillo who they've been watching since 2011, or they've been aware of since 2011 when they first scouted him in Amsterdam, playing in some sort of showcase there, and then they watched him again the next year, another sort of showcase. So they've had their eyes on this guy for a long time, and then they were aware when he first tried to defect and then, you know, was suspended by Cuba and so forth. So they like him a lot. They like his they like his body type. They like, you know, his legs. He's a fast guy. You know, a lot of people were wondering, including me, you know, last year why the Red Sox didn't do more to replace Jacoby Ellsbury, and I think we might be getting our answer right now because I think that this was the guy they had in mind. They didn't see anybody like this in the major league market who could replace Ellsbury's speed, his defense, you know, maybe his bat. And I think that they think that Rusny Castillo has a real chance to bring a lot of the same things that, you know, Jacoby Ellsbury brought to the table there in Boston for a long time.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of different names mentioned when it comes to Castillo. I've heard Brett Gardner, I've heard Ron Gant, and to start with, those are two pretty significantly different players. What kind of player do you think Castillo projects to be once he's got some time in the major leagues?
Yeah, no, if they could get sort of a Brett Gardner type of numbers, you know, they'd be thrilled. And it's hard for us to really project too much because, look, none of us have seen this guy play except for, you know, a YouTube clip. Here or there, and look, the guy hasn't played organized ball in a year and a half now, so there's just not that much out there. So we kind of, right now, we sort of have to trust what they saw. You know, John Farrell mentioned a smaller body type, at least he mentioned a smaller version of Puig. You know, probably not the same type of power there by any means. I think more of a leadoff type of player, but a leadoff type of player, a little pop in the bat, you know, 10 to, maybe they're thinking 10 to 15 home runs a year. Not a great on-base guy. You know, the Red Sox are known for their on-base, but you're not always going to have all nine guys in the lineup kind of get on base all the time. So they think that surrounding him with the other guys in their lineup, they think that you know, he can maybe set the table a little bit for Pedroia and Ortiz and Cespedes and Napoli and Craig. And so, you know, suddenly what looks like a pretty potent lineup for next year. You know, they've had this anemic lineup this year. Now you look at the offense and you think, you know, maybe that's a strength, you know, going into next year.
Yeah, and that leads me into my next question. In the immediate term, first, what's his short-term future? What are the plans for the next couple of months, maybe for the off-season, any kind of winter ball or instructional? Between now and next spring, what's the organization's plans for him?
Yeah, you know, the first thing they got to do is get this work visa complete. That always takes a few days. Hopefully that's all it takes. Then they'll get him to an affiliate, they hope, because these minor league seasons are starting to shut down around September 1st. At least get him a couple games down there so he can get his legs under him. And then they're hoping to see him in Boston here for at least a couple weeks at the end of the regular season, see what they have, and then evaluate, okay, is this guy rusty from not playing for a long time? Does he kind of need some more bats and winter ball, or would they be better served going another way? It wouldn't surprise me at all to see him play at least some winter ball this year, just because he has been sort of out of action for a long time here.
And then what about next year? I mean, is the hope, the expectation that he comes and is basically in the starting lineup opening day 2015?
Yeah, I mean, they look at this guy right now as this is their center fielder kind of going forward. And, you know, there's always, you know, depending on what happens with the rest of the roster, there's always a way that he could end up in right. You know, the way the Red Sox like to put it is, in a perfect world, we have two center fielders playing, you know, center and right field, because right field is such a tough position to play at Fenway, and that's where you had a guy like Victorino last year who was a caliber of a center fielder. You had J.D. Drew a few years back who was a really good outfielder. So they really like to have two good outfielders there. So it's just too early to see exactly what the composition of that roster is going to be. You know, do they move Alan Craig to first base and then kind of trade of Mike Napoli. There's just so many kind of permutations right now that you're trying to wrap your head around. You just really have to see kind of how the winter plays out before you really see how this all comes together.
It's an interesting situation because more and more there are fewer places for a really high revenue club to kind of take advantage of its high revenue, and it seems like this international market is still one area where they can. And the reason I mention that is that there's some notion that he may be a little bit of a high-risk player, that he may not be a hit right off the bat. And we hear about the dollars and people's kind of eyes pop at the dollars, but from the Red Sox perspective, is this really that big an investment, or do they still think maybe this is even potentially a bargain investment on a relatively unknown player?
Yeah, you make a great point, Matthew. This is a way for the Red Sox to sort of, you know, flex their muscles a little bit, maybe pay a little more for somebody than somebody else would. And they look at the average annual value where it's going to be something like, really $10, $11 million a year. And for the Boston Red Sox, that's not a ton of money. You know, you saw them, you remember when they really want somebody, like when they really want a J.D. Drew, and they pay $14 million a year for him. I mean, not many people would have paid that much for J.D. Drew, but the Red Sox thought they really needed that sort of elite defender in right field at the time. So that's why, they'll overpay in certain spots. And, they don't know exactly what kind of hitter this guy's going to be. If it's not quite a $10 million hitter, I think if it's more of a $7 or $8 million hitter, they're still comfortable, with the money they spent here because they don't see a lot of guys like this coming out on the free agent market. And like I said, going back to when they lost Ellsbury, they didn't see a lot of ways to replace it based on the current pool of players and kind of who's out there right now.
I think you may have just set a record with two mentions of J.D. Drew in the same podcast. We're gonna.
I know, yeah. Well, I know you used to cover
Corey Schwartz in the stats department.
Going down memory lane a little with J.D. We can talk about Steven too if you want.
Well, I actually cover J.D. He's one of my favorite guys. I don't know Steven, so there is some seemingly pretty good news around the Red Sox lately in the midst of some tough times. It seems like Clay Buchholz is maybe really getting his stuff together. How does that look to you?
Yeah, he's pitched well three out of the last four starts now. We kind of he had kind of a clunker against the Angels before this last start in Toronto where you're kind of like, oh, no, here we go again. What's going on? But, yeah, I mean, this was one of the goals for the end of the season for them to get this guy back on track and start using all his pitches again. And for whatever reason, he had become a little – seemed like cutter happy, he wasn't throwing that changeup like he can really throw out or that curveball. And this guy's a really good pitcher when he's on. He can be an elite pitcher when he's on. So I think that if they can get him to pitch well throughout September, that would be a huge victory for this team. If they can get him kind of going for next year, because especially with there's so much uncertainty in their pitching staff right now, that Buchholz is a real, real key for them going into the 15th season.
Has anybody, and I know we talked about this before, but it seems a little puzzling if he gets right and nobody ever really knows exactly what was wrong as he starts turning
well,
the right direction?
I think what happens with Buchholz is that, he's not the strongest guy mentally, to be candid. When things start to go wrong, he starts to internalize a little too much. Things just start to speed up on him a little. They thought he was over this by now because we saw this happen to him. Real early in his career, in 2008, he was just a mess. And then it was 2012, coming off the back injury he had the year before that. He was kind of a mess the first couple months of the season. So he's just, how you have streak hitters? Well, in this case, you have a real streak pitcher, where it seems like to me that this guy is either pitching really, really well or he's just kind of pitching you out of games. And, you're really hoping for that slumber when he's on one of those really good streaks that you can just kind of ride this guy for a while, but for whatever reason, there has never been a lot of happy medium with Clay Buchholz. It's really been one extreme or the other, so they're really hoping that the extreme can be the one they had the first 3 months of the 2013 season when he was, one of the best pitchers in the American League.
Talk about, the things that this club wants to get sorted out or get right for next year, and one we've talked about recently is the desire to have Alan Craig go into the winter on a good feeling. The numbers in the first few games back off the DL haven't been really good, but, absolutely anything can happen in 15 at-bats. How does his health look to you? How do his at-bats look to you? Does he look like a guy who has a chance to finish the season on a strong note?
I think he does. Alan Craig right now is just trying to find his rhythm. I mean, it's been a really disjointed season for him. From the problems he was having in St. Louis to then just a real kind of stunning trade there. He didn't really see that coming. And then, you know, he kind of tweaks his foot. The first game he's with the Red Sox, then kind of has to slow that down. So I think it's just being out of rhythm. If he can just get into a rhythm of playing time here, and then I think you can start to see what you have. And they really want to make sure that foot is okay. I think there's some line of thinking there, thinking that, you know, St. Louis played so deep in the season last year that if Craig did need to get something done on his foot, surgery-wise, they didn't really have time to do it because the Cardinals did go to the World Series. So I think, you know, by the time this season ends on September 28th, that's an extra month, they're going to get a real good read at that foot, say, hey, does this need even any kind of just a minor maintenance surgery just to make sure this is not an issue at all. So I think, health is another thing with Craig that they want to make sure it's right going into the winter.
Well, everybody, thanks for joining us on Ian and Matthew Talk About Former Cardinals. Thanks for joining us on MLB.com Extras. Ian Brown, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk ball.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game stream live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.